The terrain was difficult, and the going was hard. The marshy ground underfoot sucked at a man's feet every time he went to take a step. Briars and brambles covered the landscape and clawed at the Confederates as they pushed their way through it. At this rate, they would be lucky to find the Federals by nightfall, let alone join in the battle with them. A sudden rattle of musketry up ahead took Corey by surprise. Clearly, the first ranks had found the Yankees after all. He pushed forward, slogging through the mud and using his rifle to make a path through the brush. Abner struggled along beside him. The firing up ahead grew more intense. They reached the edge of the tangle and broke out into another of the marshy fields that covered so much of the ground, here east of Atlanta. A pall of smoke floated in the air, marking the line of battle. Corey's heart pounded wildly in his chest, as it always did when he was going into battle. His mind had become hardened enough to combat over the years, so that he was able to think clearly and calmly, but he had never been able to banish the fear entirely. No sane man could. As he looked across the field, Corey saw regimental flags flying among the Union defenders. Cannons belched fire and smoke from the batteries that had been set up already when the attack started. It was almost like the Yankees had been waiting for them, Corey thought. Either they had great scouts, or they were the luckiest sons of bitches in Georgia today. Either way, this fight was going to be harder than Hood and the other commanders had envisioned. Corey had been in the middle of the assaults on what came to be known as the Hornet's Nest at Shiloh. This was almost as bad. The Confederates charged into the face of withering rifle fire and a terrible artillery barrage. Corey dropped to a knee, fired, came up, and dashed forward, leaping over the bodies of fallen comrades to do so, and then went to a knee again to reload and fire. The pattern was repeated over and over. He couldn't see if his shots hit anything. The smoke was too thick for that, and he lost sight of Abner and the swirling clouds of gray. Bullets bored through the air around him and kicked up clods from the ground at his feet. Once a cannonball skidded past him, plowing a deep furrow in the dirt. Canister rounds burst like deadly fireworks. Corey stumbled forward, his mind numb to the dangers. If a man ever paused to think about what was going on around him in battle, to truly think about it, surely he would go mad. On one knee, Corey finished reloading his rifle and brought it to his shoulder. As he did so, a Yankee loomed out of the smoke and charged toward him. Automatically, Corey aimed at the man's chest and fired. The man's torso jerked backward as the ball struck him, but his momentum kept his legs stumbling forward. The effect would have been comical if it had not been so ghastly. He lost his balance and toppled to the ground. Four more Union infantrymen appeared right behind him, leaping over his body with savage grimaces on their faces. The Federals were launching a counterattack, Corey thought. All around him, the Confederate line gave ground. He couldn't stand up to the Yankees alone. He came to his feet and backed away, loading on the move, his hands deft and sure from long practice. He fired again, sent one of the Yankees tumbling. Then Corey did the only thing he could. He turned and ran. The Confederates regrouped in the trees around a large, stagnant pond. Corey leaned against one of the tree trunks for a moment, dragging in lungfuls of smoke-fouled air that choked him and made him cough. He wished he had some water, but the canteen on his hip was empty. He checked his ammunition pouch, saw that he had enough powder and shot for 5 more rounds. When that was gone, it would be bayonets and bare hands if need be.
"Corey!"
He swung around and saw Abner coming toward him. The lanky Tennessean had a scratch on his cheek, but that seemed to be his only injury. His powder-grimed face stretched in a grin.
"Damn, it's good to see you, old son. I was afraid them damn Yanks got you when they come after us."
Corey shook his head. "I managed to dodge enough times to stay alive.
Well, we're about to hit them again, I hear tell, so they'll have more chances at us. But we'll have more chances at them, too."
No sooner were the words out of Abner's mouth than shouted orders came through the trees and sent the men stumbling forward again. To the rear, Confederate light artillery had been brought up and now peppered the Union lines, providing a diversion of sorts. the Federal gunners had to elevate their cannons and return the Confederate fire. Now, along the front, it would be infantry against infantry. The wind whipped up for a moment, clearing some of the smoke from the air. Through the gaps in the clouds, Corey caught a glimpse of a treeless knob sticking up from the surrounding marshy plain. If the Confederates could push forward enough to capture that height, he thought, from up there they might be able to pour down enough artillery fire to win the day. With a sense of new urgency, he trotted forward along with Abner and the other men. For the next 2 hours, it was push and shove, thrust and counter-thrust, as Hardee's men tried to work their way toward the bald knob, and the Federals strove equally hard to keep them back. In the middle of the afternoon, Hood finally threw more reserves into the battle, sending in a division from the west, on what was now the Union right flank, since the lines of battle had rotated 90 degrees. At the same time, Texas troops led by General Patrick Claiborne circled the hill to the north and attacked the Federal rear. To Corey, it was simply one long, smoky, dangerous fight. When he ran out of ammunition, he scavenged powder and shot and percussion caps from the pouches of dead men sprawled on the battlefield, Union and Confederate alike. Lead knew loyalty to no flag. From time to time, he caught glimpses of the knob through rents in the smoke. The Southerners were drawing closer and closer to it. That hill had become the holy grail to these men. They would take it or die trying. As the afternoon wore on, Corey found himself with a group of men rushing across a field toward a line of earthworks not far from the base of the hill. Flames spewed from the muzzles of rifles thrust over the earthworks. Bullets scythed through the onrushing Confederates. Corey tripped and stumbled over the bodies of men who had fallen already to the Federal fire. He kept going somehow. He knew he had one shot left in his rifle. And now, in the middle of a charge, there was no time to hunt for more ammunition among the corpses. He saved that round until he had crossed the 50 yards of the field and was right in front of the earthworks. When the leading edge of the Confederate attack reached the Federal line, Yankees leapt on top of the earthworks to meet the charge head-on. Corey fired at last and sent one of the Yankees flying backward off the barrier. Then he reached the earthen wall and started scrambling up it, hands and feet slipping on the slick red clay. As he neared the top, one of the Yankees hacked down at him with a saber. Corey jerked aside. The blade slithered down his left arm, ripping his sleeve. One-handed, he shoved his rifle up and out. The bayonet went into the belly of the Yankee with the saber. The man screamed and clutched his middle. Then he folded up and collapsed as Corey pulled the bayonet free. The fierce hand-to-hand fight raged for seemingly endless minutes along the earthworks. A Yankee bayonet sliced Corey's calf open, but his return thrust found the throat of the Union soldier who had wounded him. After that, his leg didn't want to support him, and though he tried to retain his balance, he fell and slid down the earthworks, luckily on the Confederate side. If he had fallen among the Yankees, they would have made short work of him. Using the rifle for a crutch, he pushed himself to his feet and looked up as more Yankees surged over the top of the earthworks in a counterattack. The Confederates broke as men turned to flee. Corey hobbled back toward the trees, too. Staying to get himself killed wouldn't accomplish anything. Although bullets flew around him, he made it to shelter without getting hit. His leg was on fire and practically useless. He slumped to the ground under some trees and looked up at their bare, broken branches. Yankee bullets and artillery shells had stripped all the leaves from the trees and shattered many of the trunks and branches. In fact, as Corey pulled himself behind one of the trees, he felt the trunk shudder as bullets struck it. He hugged the ground, waiting for the hellish tempest to be over. Finally, the shooting died away. Corey looked around and saw that night was falling. He didn't know where Abner was, or even if his friend was still alive. He didn't know how the battle had turned out for the Confederates, except that it hadn't seemed to be going all that well where he was. In fact, though they had gained some ground during the afternoon, in the end, the Federals had pushed them back so that things stood just about as they had that morning. The Yankees were still in possession of that crucial height, that commanded a view of the railroad and the turnpike leading into Atlanta from the east. The generals could worry about such things, Corey told himself. What mattered to him at this moment was that he was still alive. He had survived another battle, made it through another long, bloody day. As the shadows gathered under the trees, exhaustion claimed him, and he slept. Twice, in the space of 72 hours, General John Bell Hood had gone on the offensive, just as everyone in command on both sides of the great conflict expected. And twice, although the fighting had been ferocious, the battles had ended in stalemates. Sherman still menaced Atlanta from the north and east, just as he had before Hood sallied out to attack him. The biggest difference was that now, after these three bloody days, the Confederate Army had lost more than 10,000 men. 10,000 men who could no longer help protect the Gate City of the South from the Yankees. Now it seemed that God would have to have mercy on Atlanta, because William T. Sherman surely would not.